Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Dugout Debate Podcast. This week, we chat about how and why we've fallen in love with the teams that we follow, give Jack some abuse in his absence, and reminisce on a time when live sport was an ever constant in our lives. So we'll start with football. We all have stories of why we came to love the teams that we do, and obviously we're nice and partisan, so we can give each other some abuse in the meantime. So, Chris, why don't we start with you?
So football was synonymous with Liverpool as soon as I started watching football because of my dad. So my dad's from Liverpool, and he supported Liverpool all his life. So growing up, I really didn't have a choice to choose another team. Otherwise, I'm sure I'd have been kicked out onto the street. But the time that really seems to have brought Liverpool into my heart and not have been forced upon me was the 2001 season, where Liverpool won three different trophies. I was 7 years old at the time, and I vividly remember the FA Cup final versus Arsenal at the Millennium Stadium, because Wembley was being redeveloped at that time. And it's fondly known as the Michael Owen final, as Liverpool came back from 1-0 down to beat Arsenal 2-1 with an absolutely fantastic winner from Owen quite late on in the game, where he did a little backflip at the end to celebrate. And I remember running around the garden in pure delight, having just watched that on TV. And then also in that season, they also won the League Cup. It was then known as the Worthington Cup, against Birmingham City, again at the Millennium Stadium. It finished 1-1 in normal time, but in extra time they won 5-4 on penalties. And again, I hadn't really ever seen penalties before that time. So that really stuck in my mind and got my imagination going as the drama unfolded in front of me. Robbie Fowler was the man of the match in that game. So there were some real heroes to grab onto at that young age. And then finally, probably the best game of that season, they won the UEFA Cup, now known as the Europa League, in a 5-4 win against Alaves after it went to golden goal extra time. And I actually remember being sent to bed before extra time because I was so young, and obviously too young in school probably the next day, because it would have been a midweek final. But then going upstairs and not being able to sleep and having to creep onto the landing upstairs into the hallway to try and hear what was going on, and eventually hear my dad shout that we'd scored the golden goal and that we'd won it. So I probably wouldn't have been able to sleep anyway, because he'd have definitely woken me up with his roar. but again, there was another hero that stuck out in my mind. There was a Gary McAllister, who's now Steven Gerrard's assistant at Rangers. He was the man of the match in that final, which was played at Dortmund's stadium, that fantastic cathedral of football. And I just remember all of that season and all those three competitions so vividly. We got the videotape of it, and I used to watch that VHS over and over again, and that really got me hooked. And then the following season, that was kind of cemented when I got to go and watch my first game at Anfield in that following season. So on Saturday, the 30th of March, 2002, I stepped foot in the mecca of football, that is Anfield, for the first time. To watch us beat Charlton 2-0. I don't remember that many things about the game, it being so long ago, but I do remember it was one of the few games that Nicolas Anelka actually played on loan at Liverpool, and he was someone that I remember watching live and thinking, wow, he's such a fantastic player. And again, back then it was Michael Owen who scored a goal in that game, and I'm sure that a lot of people credit him as a reason why they support Liverpool, just as Gerrard did for loads of people later on in their lives. And then I also just wanted to finish off kind of my football reminiscing with the first international football that I really remembered and got hooked into, which was the 2002 World Cup. Mm-hmm. I think before then I may have been too young to really appreciate what was going on. But that World Cup in Japan and South Korea, I remember Beckham's penalty against Argentina in the group stages. I remember sitting at home watching that and celebrating, probably not knowing how much it really meant to him, because at that time not knowing what had gone on before against Argentina for Beckham. But and then watching the quarterfinal against Brazil at school as Ronaldinho lobbed Seaman, I remember us being given time off from lessons to go and sit and watch that game. So it feeling really special as a massive occasion for the whole country that we were actually given time off school so that we could sit and watch that together.
I think what you said there is like really reminiscent of pretty much every British child or English child's sporting background, especially what you were saying about like creeping onto the landing to listen to the sport.
Yeah,
I definitely did that on more like than 10 occasions. Just I don't even know why, like even just meaningless games for England and I'd been sent to bed and I was like, but I want to hear what the result in the friendly is. And you know, yeah. I didn't care about football, I just wanted to watch it. Barrow, what about you?
It's nice to listen to Chris's experiences with the second best team in English football. I'm now going to tell you about the greatest team in English football, bar none, and that is Manchester United Football Club. Growing up, interestingly, I wasn't actually that bothered about football at all, really. I had a sort of vague awareness of it, but my dad was primarily a rugby fan, and so I would watch endless games of rugby and didn't really twig that there was another sport called football until really I arrived at secondary school. Now I can never claim to be good at football.
I was about to say Tim's face can attest to that.
and in school, I was sort of rather ashamed to say that I was a Manchester United fan. Not only because I would have been at that point described as a glory hunter, but I didn't really know many of the players or even, to be honest, who coached the team. My connection to Manchester United is actually from my grandfather, who's a native Mancunian and bought shares in Manchester United and is even buried, or his ashes were scattered, should I say, next on the side of Old Trafford. I do remember going up there, and for that occasion, and just being sort of rather overawed with this this enormous football stadium. Sort of, this is the biggest place I'd ever been in my entire life, and walking through the trophy cabinets, and I was sort of thinking, oh, this is pretty cool. And then sort of fast forward a few years to the 2012-2013 season, and at the end of it, Sir Alex Ferguson announcing his retirement, and I sort of remember that being sort of a big deal, but I didn't really know why. So I went back and did some research, and that sort of propelled me a little bit into finding my feet, in the game, and off I went to university and sort of started to watch football on a more consistent basis. And everybody had a team in my house. And so I sort of brought up the fact that I was a Manchester United supporter and obviously got accused of glory hunting and how does it feel finishing mid-table, which we consistently did and are still doing. But I think I just bring your attention to sort of two games that really sort of stand out in memory for me and really sort of cement my love for the club. Was the first one is in the 2017 to 2018 season when Manchester City, our noisy neighbours, were storming to the title. It was the local derby on April the 7th, and Manchester City had gone 2-0 up. It could have been at halftime, it could have been way more, but thankfully Raheem Sterling hadn't quite found his shooting boots on this occasion. And I just remember being in the pub, overwhelmed with it all, and in sort of depth of despair. After the break, Paul Pogba comes out and scores two goals in the space of 2 minutes, and we go on to win that game. And I just had this feeling of just amazing elation, even though the title was gone There was no chance, there was no hope of us climbing the mountain, so to speak. But it was, it, for me, it was just a real kind of sort of release of energy, and and thinking this was something that I could sort of really start to believe in. And I was quite taken aback by my own passion for it. So after this, and of course we, another change of manager, where we had to go to Paris and beat Paris Saint-Germain and overhaul a 2-0 deficit that they had sustained at Old Trafford. And I think it was the third minute, Romelu Lukaku rounds Gianluigi Buffon and puts us 1-0 up. And before the game, I was watching with my friend. I turned to him and said, "Now, I don't really want to be the kind of person who says that, you know, football is the be all and end all. This matters. I don't know why it matters, but it just does." And thankfully, we went on to go through 3-3 on aggregate, despite what you might say about
the worst decision from a referee ever.
The worst decision from a referee of all time. I do have to concede that point. But when Marcus Rashford steps up to take his penalty, I was sort of full on behind the chair, cowering, because I just wanted this to go in with sort of every breath of my body. You know, from that moment on, especially, it's just been sort of a steady upward tick. And thankfully, over here in America, we get all the games on television. So watch far more Manchester United than I have any right to do.
Yeah, you're quite a late bloomer, aren't you, Will?
I am a late bloomer. I really am. I'm ashamed to say. I don't. I have these memories of sort of tangentially hearing about the great players of the past. But it's not until very recently that I've actually gone back and sort of watched the game footage and be like, and thinking, oh, actually, yeah, they were pretty good.
Yeah, you definitely can't claim to be a glory supporter because you've actually come in after the glory's finished.
I know. I think it's either very well timed or very agonisingly timed.
You're just proving that you're a pure fan, and then when the good times do come around again, you'll be like, "See, I was there through the bad times, and I'm here again in the good times."
Yeah, I'm almost willing to let him off.
Almost,
not quite.
So, Spurs. From very young, I was very aware that Spurs was the correct team for me to support, a la father. Thank you for that, Dad. But Dad was never really the most ardent football follower. He was just like, Spurs are my team. He's from Essex. And he was like, yeah, Spurs are my team. Spurs are my dad's team. So Spurs are your team. It's like, fair enough, not knowing what Spurs was or who it was and what they were doing. But, you know. We'll move on. And then the heady days of FIFA arrived. I was like, oh, yeah, I should probably pick a team on here. And obviously to start with, I was like, yeah, Man United, they're good. I like red. Red was my favourite colour back then. I was like, yeah, they've got Ruud van Nistelrooy. They had a young Cristiano Ronaldo. I was like, oh, yeah, this is great. I love this. And then time wore on. I was like, it's actually quite boring being this good. Like it's just too easy. And I thought, oh, I'll have a little look at Spurs. And this was a Spurs team made of Jamie Redknapp at the end of his career, and Freddie Kanute, and like the young Jermaine Defoe, I think, on his first stint there. Obviously, brilliant knee Ledley King before he came. Not so great knee Ledley King. About a bunch of Spurs players who were perennially mid table. I heard Barrett say mid table earlier, and I was like, sixth is not mid table, mate. Try 11th. That was Spurs back then, and I was like, I had an affection with them, and I just. I obviously created a player who was an absolute god. He was like 2 meters tall and quicker than anyone in the game. So he went straight up front for Spurs, and then you created
Harry Kane.
Yeah, quicker than anyone. And he never did his ankle either. I'm pretty sure it's called Tim. And that was it for a little bit, and then Do you remember the Sport DAC thing that was going on? This was particularly in like year 6 and 7. It was like a free online trading game where you bought shares in players.
Oh, yeah.
That one. And then I was like, oh, I better follow the football a bit so I know what I'm doing here. So I was more aware of Spurs. And then it came to 2010, really, is when I started following football properly. And I sat down in front of the free-to-air Claxon Champions League. And it was Spurs in the qualifying match against Young Boys. And we nearly got knocked out. I think Peter Crouch was the saviour. So this football's quite good, actually. I quite like this. And then comes along the October of 2010, where Gareth Bale, after Spurs were 4-0 down and down to 10 men, Gareth Bale just decided he was going to become one of the greatest footballers on the planet and destroy Maicon with 3 goals in no time at all. And I was like, oh, if this happens every week, this will be great. And so that Champions League journey sort of continued and I got more invested and yada, 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 yada. And here we are now. You talking about the Champions League game, Will, has just, you know, obviously it's thrown me back to last Easter when we were actually like allowed to the pub and you know, could have a drink whilst watching sport. Those are the heady days, aren't they? I was with a good mate from school, Tom, and we had decided to subject ourselves to both legs of the Ajax game.
Oh my goodness, I remember this. That was it.
Yeah, we subjected each other to those games in different venues, granted. The first leg was a bit of a damp squib, and Tom has to come in from Surrey to come watch these games. So I was like, yeah, come on, you're making the journey in. We'll go to a pub on London Bridge. And half time came and we were 3-0 down. It's like, oh, you know what? I might go, to be honest. You can't go. Champions League semi final. You can't go anywhere. He put his leather jacket down. He's like, yeah, fair enough.
That sounds like me in Istanbul.
Yeah, well, you know, and then obviously we all know what happened, and I was hit in the face by 2 Spurs fans simultaneously from different sides. I had a bit of a black eye the following day.
Nice.
With all the jumping around, and then the bouncers in this place decided they were going to get involved in the middle and try and separate us. Like, you can't celebrate like that in here. And I was like, I'll tell you where and when I can celebrate. The greatest comeback ever seen by... well, in modern day Spurs history. And yeah, like, I think that this is the point with support, and we may as well go over it now, that like, it doesn't matter where you start, these things can just get affirmed further down the line. Like, I love the fact that we made it to the final, then Moussa Sissoko decided to punch the ball in the first minute of a really boring Champions League final. Like, there's glory in glorious defeat, as I like to say, because that's all we can go for, considering we haven't won anything for about a billion years. But yeah, I think the teams you bond with, they strike you like on a personal level. Well, I like the glorious failure that Spurs is. It just makes it better for when we actually do something, even if I'm like 89 and sort of crumbly in a bed somewhere. And it will be brilliant, and I'll have a heart attack and a cardiac arrest, and that'll be it. I've done it.
Well, I don't know, in that season particularly, I don't know how your heart could have actually taken that game, especially. I mean, it was tense for me watching it, just by not being a Spurs supporter. And then, of course, you're coming off the back of a VAR assisted win over Manchester City as well, which is again one of the tensest and most unbelievable games I've ever seen in my life.
Well, my girlfriend has a video of me shortly after the final whistle of that game, and she literally the last couple of days she has been going through all her photos just to clear her phone out, and there's this video of me just rolling around on the floor in hysterics after the City game. Stuff like that just never happened to Spurs.
Like, Raheem Sterling
scoring with Raheem Sterling scoring with the last kick of the game is exactly what I'd expect from a Spurs team to knock him out. But not a Fernando Llorente almost handball off the hip into the goal, and then VAR assisted semi final appearance. Like, this is just, it doesn't work like that. And even 3-0 down at half time away at Ajax, I was like, you, sometimes you just get that feeling. You're like, yeah, I reckon it's still on here. I reckon it's still on. And more often than not, you're proved completely and utterly wrong. But that time, thankfully, it was right. So, yeah, what's the message we're giving? These things just affirm themselves over time? I think that's what you're saying.
They do, and that they can hurt. That's what you're saying. They do hurt, but it's worth it in the end because you get some glory out of it as well. But, yeah, it grabs you in a tribal way that probably football does more than any other sport because it is so tribal.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I have to agree. Anyway, that's 20-something minutes on football. Should we go on to rugby? I'll start because I'm the boring one. We all went to school with Anthony Watson. He plays for Bath. I support Bath.
I thought we were going to hype that a little bit more than that.
No, continue, my friends.
No more about you going to watch him at Twickenham because I knew you went to one of those games.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, this is when they reached the final against Saris and me and a few mates from uni went down. And within 5 minutes, Anthony got concussed. And then Owen Farrell, I think, walked past him for the first try. And that was the end of the game, really. Like, Sarri just pulled away. So that was good. Again, glorious failure. I'm a specialist in glorious failure.
It's definitely one of the most painful experiences of my life, that final. I support Bath as well. I actually spent a good 3-4 years living in Bath as a young kid, and I don't know whether my dad just decided to support Bath because he lived there, or whether he had some previous connection to Bath, who were the best team in the English Premiership, I think in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, just before it went professional.
And I think this is rather typical of him, because he also seemed to have a favour of Liverpool back when they were champions of England. So I don't know whether it's...
I think he is the
definition of a glory hunter. But growing up in Bath, there was no way that I could support anyone else. One of the first times that I sort of fully embraced rugby union was, of course, the World Cup final.
Yeah.
And we'd gone, I think Bath had moved into there, had bought the their training ground.
The one they have now, Farley House.
Yeah, Farley House. And we actually, me and my dad actually went to go and watch the World Cup final in a room in Farley House, and it was just unbelievable. It was one of the best experiences I've ever had as a young kid. So growing up, I supported Bath, and we were sort of in and out. But going back to the Premiership final, which we would lose to Saracens, getting lost in that is sort of the most unbelievable season that I have probably ever seen from an English side that hasn't been Saracens. It was just the most scintillating attacking side you could ever really hope for. George Ford pulling the strings at number 10, Carl Eastman inside centre, Jonathan Joseph outside centre, Anthony, I think Samosa Rokagugune was just coming through as well, and Matt Banahan as well, the giant on the wings, and we just absolutely sort of tore teams to shreds. It was sort of one of the best seasons that I've ever had following a team, and it was just a shame that we let it slip in the final.
Yeah, so I wouldn't say I'm a Bath supporter per se, but I definitely have a soft spot for them. Like you too, obviously, because of the Anthony link. My girlfriend's other half now lives in Bath, just a walk away from the wreck as well. So I have to say I had a few cheeky visits to stay at theirs just so that I can go to the wreck. And it's a fantastic club, but that's not where my rugby journey began. That's kind of been part of it. And I loved watching that particular season and was cheering you guys on in that final. But like you said, Will, I obviously remember watching the 2003 World Cup final. But I was only 9 at the time, and I do remember it, and loads of people talk about how that's the big moment that kind of started English rugby off on a great path, and loads of people got inspired by it. But I, for me personally, it wasn't until 2006, and in particular the 8th of January 2006, that rugby really had me. Our junior school had been invited to be the guard of honour for London Irish against Leicester in the Guinness Premiership at that time, which involved flag waving on the pitch as both of the teams came out. Instead of 9, I was 11 at this point, so I was a little bit older and loved playing rugby at school, but had no idea that watching club rugby every week could be so good. I remember being in awe as Martin Corrie led out a star-studded Leicester team at that point, including Austin Healy, Ben Kay, Graham Rowntree, George Shooter, Julian White, Andy Goo, Jordan Murphy. And they all ran straight past me, and I was thinking, blimey, that's half the England team at this point. And they were all enormous, and they were all kind of, for a guy at my age, were really inspirational. And on top of that, the game was a cracker as well. It was a nail-biter. It finished 25-28 to Leicester. And I fell in love with two players in the London Irish team at that stage. It was a very young Dylan Armitage on the wing. Mm-hmm. And then on the other, there was Topsy Ojo making his debut. Mm-hmm. For Irish, and both of those players really inspired me. I loved the way that they played the game. And from then on, I was begging my dad to take me back to Irish games. They were our local team. I was living in Windsor at that stage, and obviously they played at the Medeski in Reading. And we became regulars, even going to the Heineken Cup semi-final at Twickenham versus Toulouse in 2008. That's fantastic. Well, it's the pinnacle for London Irish in that period. It was their best team of all time during that period. So I was very lucky. I joined at their high point, really. But from then on, rugby was my main sport. From then on, rugby grabbed me in a way more than football. Yes, I loved Liverpool, and yes, Liverpool would be my number one supported team out of any sports team. But rugby grabbed me more than football did at that point, and I loved watching rugby on a regular basis more than I did watching football. And that kind of set me on the path to where I am today, where I am working for a Premiership rugby club today, and that kind of inspired me to want to be involved in the game in some way. So that really did have a massive, profound effect on me as a youngster.
I think there's definitely something to be said for playing the game as a kid as well. Yeah. And growing up playing the game, because I think one of my my fundamental ties to rugby is that I did play I did play the game at school.
You certainly did love your rugby. You were playing it all the time, so much so that I think you were even while playing football, you'd say, "I'm going to be playing rugby now." Decided to take people out. We've already referenced this one, but the earlier reference that my face and Will didn't get on too well playing football. I decided that one of my very few moments of skill that I ever performed in football, obviously in school shoes, because everyone's amazing at football in school shoes, went around Will, and Will just decided, no, that's not happening. And then he stuck his leg out behind himself as I went by, and basically sort of caught me mid-chest, and my entire body went over the top of his leg, and I fell face first into this rock hard floor, grass granted, and I had this enormous scrape on my face. It was so funny.
I think I watched Nigel de Jong kick Jabby Alonso in the chest, and I thought, Alonso, I want a bit of that action.
Yeah.
I can only apologise.
I'm a DM and I'm a ball winning midfielder. That's all I'm here for. In I go.
Yeah, and I was stood there on the other side of it waiting to pick you up, Tim, as we were like, oh yeah, he's done it again. Barrett's gone through someone else.
NFL. I'll start again, I think, this time. This is a slightly weirder route. My friend Pete, who played American football at uni, he was like, oh, you need to get into American football so we can watch some stuff together. I was like, yeah, fair enough. So he said, right, Hard Knocks is starting soon. You can sit down and watch that and see what you think. And it was with the Houston Texans, who are now my adopted team. I know, like, by this point, I knew absolutely nothing about American football. I was just like, these guys may as well be it, right? Sort of. I may as well follow a team, see what happens. It may as well be these guys. And the first episode comes along, and they introduce you to this guy, J.J. Watt. I'm like, who's this guy? I've never heard of him before. And then I think they cut to a montage of him just absolutely smashing it in the gym. I'm like, oh my word, this guy is an absolute animal. Look at him, like 6'7", 6'6", or however tall he is, and you know, quicker than, definitely quicker than I am. All this stuff, and he's, you know, smashing the gym. He's great to the fans. It's all this kind of thing. I was like, yeah, I can get on board with JJ Watt. And then a couple of episodes later, they play his mic while he's in the middle of a game. And he's just an absolute animal. Like, this really nice guy off the pitch just turns into this complete lunatic on the field. It's like, yeah, this guy, I vibe with this guy really hard. Like, this is my jam. I like this. I'm like this. So then I decide to support the Houston Texans. Like, yeah, me and JJ Watt getting on. And then JJ Watt decides that he's going to be permanently injured for the next sort of 6 or 7 years. So I'm going to really watch him play. But yeah, that's how I sort of fell into NFL. And then obviously we've spoken about these other things, the various bits and bobs of games, legendary games that have happened the past few years, especially Super Bowls, which have just been absolutely outstanding. So I know they haven't involved the Texans per se, but the Texans tend to get into the playoffs and do a bit there. When they came up against Kansas City and they were up by 20 something points after a while, I was like, this isn't going to last. And within about 7 minutes, the game completely turned. I was like, that didn't last.
But you've actually watched NFL in your beloved Spurs Stadium, haven't you, Tim?
I have
watched it with me. That was a particularly good game as well.
Yeah, that was really good fun. Where I got to show my friends around my new shiny home that's currently sitting. Being used by, I think it's North Middlesex Hospital outpatient women's unit or something like that. Yeah, it's reasonable. Yeah, but you know, it's kind of weird, I guess, that your outpatient department has like posters of Kieran Trippier, Yang Tongan.
Do you think several Arsenal fans are just refusing to be admitted and if they were to go into the stadium?
You know what? I reckon if you're going to hospital at the moment, you probably need it.
No, yeah, you're probably not refusing entry anywhere.
But anyway, yeah, NFL's good. I feel like you have to. The problem with it is that, just speaking on a fan basis, you have to invest quite a lot to get it. Like, you have to put the time in to
understand
what's going on to be able to actually enjoy it. Like, I sat with my housemate watching the Super Bowl this year, and then after about, you know, I think it was just after the halftime show where things started getting going again, he was fast asleep. Like, just gone. I was like, mate, come on, this is actually, it's a reasonable game.
I think Hard Knocks is a good way into it for that, actually, because it has the human story behind it, so it kind of makes you want to invest a bit of time in it, because you get all of the stories behind the players.
Exactly.
You get to see that little bit more, which means, yeah, I want to find out more about this game that maybe I don't understand as much. But I personally hate that people always say, oh, it's that game's way too slow. There's too many breaks. There's always a commercial break going on. Why the hell would you enjoy that? But the actual, every single individual play, there's nothing quite like it. And the fact that the coaches are actually in control of everything out there on the field, unlike most other sports.
I have to say, I am a bit of a convert. I was definitely in that school until I actually started watching it and being like, okay, the two just are not comparable, rugby and NFL. So
yeah, there's no point making that comparison. Just actually enjoy the sport for what it is.
Will, what about you?
I'm sort of in the same boat as you, Tim. I was sort of tangentially aware of the NFL until, and didn't really understand the game, didn't understand why people liked the game, because I thought it was slow. Until one of my friends, Matt, sort of really started to sat me down and made him watch a game with him and sort of introduced me to it and put his reasoning as to why it was a fantastic sport. Having lived in America for a few months now, and the time I arrived sort of perfectly coincided with the season just gone, I've been able to watch if not all the games, but a fair amount of them. And just being sort of absolutely blown away by number one, the physicality, just the supreme athletes that these guys are, and the amount of strategic thinking that goes into sort of each and every play that on the field. It's sort of, you know, there's no energy wasted. Locking into a great player really does help with sort of that transition. So this season just gone, we've experienced sort of two kind of historic seasons, really, from Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, and sort of the experience of watching those two players live is just unbelievable. There's sort of an electricity that sort of happens when they get on the ball and make plays. My father-in-law is a Patriots fan, and so I think again, as in with Manchester United, I might have just missed the boat in terms of the glory years for the Patriots, because I definitely think they're in for, unless something shocking happens in the next couple of drafts, I think they're in for a little bit of a tight time.
I've got some breaking news for you guys. Following Tottenham's last trophy, of course, the 2019 Audi Cup trophy. That's right. The Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, 3 minutes ago, has been named Venue of the Year at the Stadium Business Awards 2020.
Oh, that is breaking news.
How about that? Hot off the press sports news. You heard it here first, people.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't really know how to react. I might just go and get a beer.
You're not quite celebrating it like that goal against Ajax, Tim. That's what I was expecting.
You're joking. You didn't hear me as I mute the mic and dust. I just punched myself in the face just for no apparent reason. Going back to what you said earlier, Chris, about Hard Knocks being a good way of getting to know players, I've just finished watching the test today, following the Aussies through the last couple of years. And I have to say, I was enjoying it a lot when England beat them in the semi-final of the World Cup. That was funny. I have to say, I did enjoy it a lot when they completely melted down when Ben Stokes won the test in Headingley. That was funny. But at points, I found myself supporting the Australians, which...
Oh my God, what's happened to you?
I've actually said it now. I was like, oh, a couple of these guys, they're actually all right. And then Warner and Smith return. I remember that Warner is a complete tool.
Nice choice of words.
And Smith is just a bit weird. Like, he's just a strange bloke. Brilliant, but a bit strange. And then I'm like, oh yeah, I remember. That's why we don't like the Australians.
That's why I'm English, yeah.
Yeah. So, like you say, those are really accessible. I'm really excited to see what they're going to do with the Spurs All or Nothing that was meant to be coming out.
So it's going to be nothing.
Well, exactly. It's going to be two nothings.
So the first season that I got hooked on American football was back in 2007, back when the Patriots went undefeated for the whole regular season until the Super Bowl. when they lost out 17-14 to the New York Giants in one of the greatest upsets of all time. Eli Manning pulling it off to keep the Dolphins happy that they'd still had the only undefeated season in the history of football. But I was already a pseudo-Patriots fan, as one of my dad's American friends, Gene Barton, had come over from Boston to visit us. And he brought with him some Patriots jerseys for us as a present, with legendary linebacker Teddy Bruschi on the back. And from that moment, I was like, well, I didn't really know anything at all about NFL when he brought these over. I was like, oh, they look smart. Oh, that's something nice to wear. But I didn't really understand what it meant. But then once I found out more about the Patriots, their history, I watched that season in 2007. Obviously, they lost agonisingly in the final. But that kind of cemented my love for the Patriots and the unpredictability of the NFL. As we've mentioned, one of the many reasons why you'd love it, and why, unlike the big six we have in football and the Premier League over here, it's just completely crazy who wins all the time. It rotates all of the time because of the draft, and the system works well. Another reason why I love it. And from then on, from that point, I was recording Sunday Night Football on Channel 4 with Nat Coombs and Mike Carlson to get my fix of drama from across the pond every week, because that was pretty much the only way I could get it. I didn't have a Sky subscription at that point. That was the only little fix of NFL that I could get. And then from then on, very recently, we reprised doing a fantasy team in the NFL, which again, I would recommend is a good way into any sport. People do it in the Premier League, people do it in the NFL, but it's a very good way to get to know players. And you start rooting for different players and different teams because they're in your fantasy team.
NBA.
I'll go first, because it's really sort of it's a really kind of recent thing. I sort of got into the NBA during the sort of beginning of last year. Tried as best as I could to dive into American culture being here.
So you can talk to other people.
So I can talk to other people and they know what I'm talking about.
Did you guys see the ball the other day? Ooh, that was good.
I do love the sport now. It's not sort of not sort of up there with my favourites just yet. But I remember sort of being quite small and sort of hearing about Michael Jordan, and sort of that sort of struck a chord with me. And I think he was sort of more much of my pathway into the NBA, sort of trying to researching him and seeing what he did for the game and sort of how good he was, like win at all costs attitude, which sort of probably bubbled over a little bit too much into my footballing career at school. I think it's come through and sort of watching the NBA as regularly as I did before the season got cancelled. I think I've had a new engagement with the game that otherwise I probably wouldn't have had if I'd remained in England.
Do you have a team?
Well, not as such.
Okay, if I had to make you pick a team.
If you had to make me pick a team.
Yeah, we're going to do it live on the podcast.
Yeah. Well, I kind of like the Houston Rockets, weirdly.
Yes, the beard.
When I watched it, I just thought the way that they that James Harden and Russell Westbrook sort of dovetailed together was really going to be something special. And although they've kind of tailed off a little, they were tailing off a little bit, I did think that they had a serious shout at getting through to the finals. But we'll have to see whether that happens or not.
There we go. Live on podcast, a man selects the team he's going to support for his whole life.
No.
No take-backsies.
I do have a soft spot for Houston as well. I love James Harden. The beard is fantastic. But I got into the NBA similarly to Will. As I watched the documentary More Than a Game about LeBron James's high school basketball career in Akron, Ohio. Which I'd highly recommend. But that cemented a love for me of LeBron. And that meant that at that time, he just started at the Miami Heat in 2010. That was when I started watching the NBA a bit more and fell in love with his fellow Big Three members, Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. And my other favourite at that time was also Dwight Howard, who was then of the Orlando Magic. So I had a bit of love for the two Florida-based teams, Miami and Orlando at that time. Since Dwight's played for pretty much every team under the sun, but I haven't followed him. However, I have followed LeBron as he's gone through his career. But I was lucky enough to go and watch a game live with fellow Dugout Debate host Jack Simpson, who is not here today. But in 2016, we both attended the NBA London game at the O2, which was the Orlando Magic against the Toronto Raptors. And it was a thrilling 106-103 overtime win for the Raptors. So we chose a pretty good game to go to. But I felt very fortunate to be able to watch some of these absolute freaks of nature live. And it really cemented my love of the game. I would say the NBA does take a lot of dedication for the amount that they play, but if you want to really get dedicated into a well worthwhile sport, well, NBA is definitely that.
All right, fine.
We'll get you involved, Tim.
I'll do it. Thank you, everyone, for listening to another episode of the Dugout Debate Podcast. Nice little chat there about why we love sport. If you want to tell us your stories about how and why you fell in love with a sport or a particular team, please feel free to get in touch with us. And if you have any ideas for things that you'd like us to talk about in the future, maybe it's size-related, maybe it's small size-related, it could be anything, just get in touch and we'll be happy to do that. We've got a lot of time on that. Thank you, chaps.
Thank you very much.
It's @dugout_debate on all the social media and Facebook and all that stuff. See you soon.